You're listening to Security Wire Weekly, a CertSecurity.com podcast for October 8th, 2008. This edition, Scott Mitek of Trusted IT joins us to talk about the state of identity protection laws. There are a number of laws to talk about in the news of late. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger vetoed a bill that would have added further protections for consumers. Also, new FTC red flag rules go into effect November 1st for healthcare firms. But first, some breaking news today. Symantec has announced plans to acquire Message Labs in a $695 million deal. Symantec said it would start a software-as-a-service offering. Message Labs sells web security and instant messaging protection as a service. The deal is subject to European regulatory approval, and both sides expect it to close by year's end. Up next, Scott Mitek, CEO of Trusted ID, joins us to talk about the state of identity protection laws. Mitek offers identity theft protection services to consumers through Trusted ID. He keeps a close eye on identity theft laws and what companies are doing to clamp down on data leakage. Scott, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be with you.
Let's talk a little bit about the news of late. There has been some news around regulations and laws out there. The first that comes to mind is the Consumer Data Protection Act in California. The California governor there, Arnold Schwarzenegger, vetoed that protection act. Well, he says it attempts to legislate in an area where the marketplace has already assigned responsibilities and liabilities that provide for the protection of consumers. And do you think that's the case? Do you think consumers are well protected right now, especially in California, where the governor obviously doesn't like this particular act?
You know, California has been the thought leader consistently with identity protection, consumer data protection, starting well, most recently. One of the most major acts that was enacted in California was 2004, a law that allowed California residents to freeze their credit reports.
Mm-hmm.
And freezing a credit report is an incredibly effective way to stop the most dangerous forms of identity theft. It basically tells the three credit bureaus, do not sell my data without my permission, and then gives you a key to be able to lock and unlock your credit report so that you can determine when a lender or any third party gets to see it. Subsequent to that, California passed the nation's first law in data breach, which required businesses to notify consumers when their information had been compromised. So in both of those cases, what started in California then spread right across the country to the point that now most states have similar laws to those which were passed first in California.
Sure.
Now, you know, there's that fine line, obviously. What is protective for a consumer often has a cost for a business. And you know, those issues were at the heart of the controversy over some of that recent legislation.
Do you think businesses are doing enough right now? You know, it does cost money to put these protections in place.
Yeah, it absolutely does. It's in many cases tens of millions of dollars or more for, you know, a large institution that has large databases of personal information. Here's what I know, which is that, you know, the kinds of data breaches or hackings that have occurred to major corporations in the last couple of years have a very meaningful and dangerous effect on those companies. Take, for example, a company like ChoicePoint. Went from being an invisible company, from one that was notorious across the country and synonymous with failure to protect personal data.
That's really what started it all off.
It was, actually. Yeah. You're right. Now, ChoicePoint is also a great example because they turned that around very well and managed to turn the lemon into lemonade with a campaign that impressed upon legislators and consumers just how much investment they subsequently had made in data protection. So, you know, the innovative companies, the strong companies, those that are here to stay are absolutely making significant investments because they do not want to be the next ChoicePoint. What concerns me more as a consumer is the small companies with whom I'm doing business, who are storing my personal information, who do not have the infrastructure or the resources to be able to make those kinds of significant financial investments required to safeguard data.
Mm-hmm. The other question is, you know, why are these companies holding this information in the first place? Why are they storing this information? Do they really need to store credit card information, for example?
Yeah, and that's another great question. And, you know, there has been in the last few years a standard called PCI, which has been imposed upon many companies that collect credit card information, which governs now how they are permitted to hold information. And so that has improved the practices of many. But the more dangerous data than just my credit card number are things like my social security number or my usernames and my passwords or my medical history. There's a lot of data being held in a lot of different places right now. And it frankly becomes a bewildering maze to contemplate, you know, everywhere my social security number now lives after being a member of the digital economy for a couple of decades. Most companies that today have my social security number actually have no need for it whatsoever. And you're seeing some laws moving through Congress right now that address that issue as well, which is to return the social security number as a unique identifier for the U.S. government only, and to prohibit its use in many places where it has become a convenient number to use to identify a customer. Take, for example, my doctor's office, which asks for it every single time I go see a new doctor, mm-hmm. with absolutely no legitimate reason.
But even if a law was put in place, even if Congress did act, it's fair to say that these numbers are still out there because we've been using them for so long, right?
You're absolutely right. And, you know, that's why many would argue that the best path right now is not to try to, you know, put the genie back in the bottle, but find a way to put a bulletproof vest around the genie, which is to say, let's see if we can build systems that make it harder or ideally impossible for an identity thief to be able to use a social security number, because let's take it as a given that if I really want to, I can get anyone's social security number in about 5 minutes, which is actually very true. So that is where I think you're going to see probably more successful efforts to thwart the problem of identity theft is around that kind of proactive control of how the data can be used.
Let's talk briefly about the FTC's red flag and address discrepancy rule. It goes into effect November 1st for healthcare institutions. But the real question I have on my mind is, you know, is there really any teeth here? Does the FTC plan to enforce it? And if so, how?
Well, first of all, the red flag rules themselves are generally good. They're things that the banks, frankly, should be doing anyway to mitigate their own fraud losses. But as we all know, part of the reason that identity theft exists in the first place is that, unfortunately, many financial institutions do the cost-benefit analysis and have determined that it's easier to write off the bad debt from a few cases of identity theft than it is to put in place up front the protections that would both reduce the identity theft but may also reduce some of the legitimate revenue that they can make. So these red flag rules are great in that they no longer allow that a financial institution to make that trade-off in the same way and focus more on prevention rather than just cleaning up the mess once it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the FTC, you know, as with any government bureaucracy or government organization, to be more to use the euphemism, it has its limitations for sure. And I think you're going to see some healthy enforcement initially. And then hopefully that will, you know, ingrain in the processes of financial institutions a process, you know, way of doing business that will just become self-sustaining and not need a lot of government oversight.
And there was recently a report out that said that less than a third of U.S. banks will be fully compliant with the U.S. government's identity theft prevention rules by its November 1st deadline.
Well, these laws have been, financial institutions have been knowing that they are coming now for a year or two. So, If there are large legitimate banks that are not going to be compliant, I would be surprised.
Most of these guys have a great IT security program in place. I would think that if they were, you know, following, if they had their own security standards in place and have been following them for quite some time, you know, very stringent standards, that they would probably meet many of these rules.
Yes. However, as I was saying a second ago, many of them will walk that fine line between dialing down the fraud tool, the fraud solutions that they have in place, because if you prevent one fraudulent transaction, you may also prevent two legitimate transactions.
I see what you're saying.
And that trade-off would, if you were making a simple cost-benefit analysis, suggest that you should probably accept that one fraudulent transaction to get the two that are legitimate.
So it's a lot of it is these companies and these financial institutions are doing risk analysis and accepting some of that risk.
And that's exactly what it might be at the heart of the entire financial crisis we're seeing right now. Not this issue in particular, but this is something we've seen over the last half dozen years, is the banks driving to achieve results, financial results, which have perhaps erred on the wrong side of that risk curve.
Well, let me ask you about that. How you think the financial crisis, these uncertain times, will have an effect on data security in general? Do you have any take on that? Do you think people's identities are going to be less secure in some of these organizations out there that are in trouble?
Well, I'm not sure that financial crisis is going to negatively impact security per se. I think the investment in security will probably be one of the last things you might see cut. However, historically we have seen a correlation between desperate financial times and an uptick in crimes resulting or motivating or driving that kind of fraud. So I would expect that over the course of the coming years, statistics related to identity theft are certainly not going to go down, and much more likely accelerate their upward trend right now.
Let's talk briefly about data breaches. I wanted to bring up a report out from Verizon, their investigative division. They looked at breaches that they worked on from 2004 and 2007, and the majority of which, 62%, were caused by employee error and not necessarily attacks. So even if a company is has very strong security in place, it appears that there's always going to be that human factor.
Absolutely correct. And 62 might even be a kind and conservative number. So much of what is happening right now is inadvertent error. And it's everything from the backup tape falling off the back of the FedEx truck, mm-hmm. to an employee leaving a laptop in the front seat of their car when they run in to get coffee, and that is why those statistics about the actual cases of identity theft deriving from data breach are so exceptionally low, which is to say, in most cases, the object of the crime is not the procurement of the data, but rather the technology, the computer, the hardware that is holding that information. The VA breach is a great example of that. 26 million veterans' data files on a simple laptop, and the laptop got stolen because someone wanted the laptop. And when the laptop was finally recovered, it was conclusively proven, at least so the FBI claims, that there had been no access to that data whatsoever, but rather the laptop had been fenced and sold.
Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't have been an issue if the VA had deployed encryption on that laptop.
Yeah, or even better, had a policy that said personal sensitive information does not live on a laptop at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the policy that should be in place. And there are certainly ways to protect laptops. There's remote destruction, and there's encryption technologies that are widespread. But the fact of the matter is a company that is sincere and deliberate about protecting its data is going to keep that data on a centralized server behind a firewall and completely encrypted.
why don't we just talk about your company? It's called Trusted ID. Is it really just identity insurance aimed at consumers?
Well, Trusted ID offers identity protection for consumers.
Okay.
So we have about a dozen different ways that we help individuals protect their identity and help protect that identity proactively so that the thief can be stopped before he or she has a chance to affect you.
Are there a range of services that it offers, and how does it work?
Yeah, so there are a dozen different things we do. It ranges from things as simple as putting a fraud flag on your credit report for you, which requires a lender to verify that it's really you before they open credit in your name, to a service that helps you figure out whether your children have credit reports, which in most cases they shouldn't, and if they do, we help you lock down those credit reports. We scan the web for lost or compromised credit card numbers, social security numbers, bank account numbers. We have a database of over 3 million credit card numbers that have been exposed on the web where they shouldn't have. And the list goes on, but it all gets wrapped up with a $1 million limited service warranty and a team of identity restoration experts who take good care of you in the event that that all those services fail and someone actually is able to steal your identity.
Well, Scott, thanks very much.
My pleasure. Great speaking with you today. Thank you.
Well, that does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at certsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest security news and information at our news page at certsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westerveld. Have a great day.